Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
I discovered when we talked about the Hessians, I kind of like talking about battles.
Who knew?
I know.
I didn't know.
Until just now. So today we're going to talk about a battle that longtime listeners may remember a little bit about, thanks to our episode on the Bayeux Tapestry, which was hosted by Sarah and Dablina back in 2011. The Bayeux Tapestry, which is really a piece of embroidery and not a tapestry, is a visual account of the Battle of Hastings and the events that led up to it. So if you know anything at all about European history, you can probably at least boil the Battle of Hastings down to a sentence, which is that the Normans invaded England in 1066, and their victory ended the Anglo-Saxon phase of English history. If you actually grew up in England, you probably know a whole lot more about it than that. It tends to be something that's covered extensively in English schools because it is so central to the history of England.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, sadly, when you mention it, at least when I mention it to most people that I know, and I'll say, oh, Battle of Hastings, they will do what I have done previously in my life and gone, 1066, and that's the one thing they remember.
Yes.
So,
yeah, I had that exact conversation with the boyfriend where I said, we're going to talk about the Battle of Hastings. And he said, oh, 1066.
Husband as well.
And and I said, yes. And he's like, we won, right? And I said,
you don't know what this
who is the we in yep. this case.
We had almost an identical conversation at our house. So,
just like with our recent episode on the Hessians, where people can boil down the Hessians to a sentence that's not really indicative of what actually happened, that one sentence description does not do the whole Battle of Hastings justice. So today we're going to look at that in a lot more detail, including lots of stuff that's not covered in the Bayeux Tapestry episode.
Yeah, because that's a lot to cover in one piece of sewing.
Well, it's a very long piece of sewing.
It is. And now I think of the Futurama episode where they kind of did a spoof of it.
That's funny.
About invading a spider planet and they were weaving the tapestry from the silk of the spiders as the battle was happening.
Wow. I need to go watch that.
I love my Futurama. There's no secret there.
So first, though, we're going to get back to history and talk about the backstory on this little ditty. And we have to go back a little bit of a ways to get a feel for what was really going on when the Normans hopped into the picture and invaded. In the 5th century, Germanic peoples, known as the Angles, the Saxons, and the Jutes, began to immigrate to what we now know as England. And at the time, this area was mostly inhabited by Celts. As the Germanic peoples moved in, they pushed the Celts into what we would now call Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. So the word England comes from these Germanic peoples. It actually means land of Angles.
By the 8th century, Christianity had really started to spread through a lot of England, and people from Denmark had also started to move into the area as well. And so with all of these influences, the language kind of evolved into what we now know as Old English. So at this point, England was a mostly Christian nation, and it mostly spoke one language, although there were several distinct dialects. And it was ruled by a king, with earls who were responsible for specific regions within the kingdom.
And the Vikings started invading Britain in the 9th century. And over the span of roughly 150 years, Vikings conquered a lot of England. But then the Anglo-Saxons, living in Wessex, led by Alfred the Great, staved them off and started pushing them back out again. In the process, they were honing their battle abilities and really making the Anglo-Saxon world a power to be reckoned with on its own.
After this point, there was a period of relative calm, which lasted about 50 years before the Vikings came back and started up a new cycle of pillaging and plundering and then retreating back to where they came from before coming back for more pillaging and plundering. It sounds very exciting, but it was actually quite dangerous.
Well, yes, often exciting things are. And this was kind of the state of things when one of Alfred the Great's direct descendants, Edward, entered the picture. And today we know of Edward as Edward the Confessor, but that was a name he was given about 100 years after his death when the Pope recognized him as a saint.
So Edward was born in about 1003, and because of all these ongoing Viking attacks, he and his family took refuge in Normandy for a number of years, and there they naturally built a lot of ties to Norman society. So they made a lot of friends there, were influenced in their politics while they were living there. It took several failed attempts, but Edward finally returned to England and became king in 1042, and he brought a lot of Norman advisors and kind of Norman politics along with him.
And Edward married a woman named Edith, although they had no children, so this left a question of who the heir was going to be. And there's no written account of exactly what transpired there, but the general historical consensus is that in March of 1051, he announced at a council meeting that he wanted his kinsman, William of Normandy, to take the throne after his death.
This did not sit at all well with a guy named Godwine, who was the Earl of Wessex and Edith's father, so Edward's father-in-law. He had actually been a favorite to become the king himself and was hoping to see one of his own children or grandchildren eventually on the throne. And atop of these own aspirations of power that he had, he really was a legitimately powerful person, and he had a much stronger backing than Edward did among the other leaders of England.
And this tension between Godwine and the king really took England to the brink of a civil war. And eventually, Edward outlawed Godwine after he refused to punish the people of Dover, which fell under his earldom, for an attack on Edward's brother-in-law. And Godwine and his sons and most of his family fled to Flanders and Ireland, and then Edward banished his wife to a nunnery.
This seems kind of ruthless on Edward's part.
Didn't want anything to do with those people anymore.
Yes.
That's like a brutal divorce at that point.
It is. And he also, in the aftermath, made kind of a critical mistake. He got rid of a tax that had been used to fund a mercenary naval fleet. The idea was that he was basically giving everyone who was being taxed a tax break. And he probably thought that if he really needed an army or a naval force, that he could just call it up because he was the king. And in a lot of circumstances, that probably would have worked. But that, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on whose side you're on, meant that when Godwine came back across the channel with his own fleet in 1052, Edward did not have a force ready to fight him off.
And on top of Edward not having enough manpower to resist Godwine's attack, public sentiment was pretty firmly on Godwine's side at this point. People just did not like the idea of a Norman line of succession. And they didn't even like how many Normans the king had among his advisors.
So, Edward was basically politically forced to pardon Godwine and his family, and they once again took up their positions of power in England. So, when Godwine died, his son, who was known as Harold Godwineson, continued to be a very powerful figure in England. And this would turn out to be a problem when it came back around to the line of succession.
So now we're going to hop into the Norman backstory on it.
Yes.
So over in Normandy, William was Earl. His wife was Matilda of Flanders. And Flanders and England were not on terrific terms. This may have been one of the reasons why Edward promised the throne to William to help keep him in line and discourage him from lining up with Flanders against him.
But thanks to this whole idea that he was being promised to become the King of England and his marriage to Matilda of Flanders, Henry I of France saw William as a really huge threat. So William had to fend off multiple invasions from France and its allies during the 1050s.
And it was really only after William had a particularly decisive victory against them that France and its allies left William alone. And only after his major rivals died did he really seem to get any rest. He was pretty much constantly having to fend off one attack after another.
Yeah. That brings us back to Harold. In about 1054 or 1055, Harold visited Normandy. Because of a storm, he actually wound up landing in Flanders and was taken prisoner at first, and William had to come and secure his release.
And at some point during this little excursion, for reasons that different accounts report completely differently, Harold swore an oath to honor William's claim to the throne once Edward died. Norman writers say that Edward had sent Harold specifically for this purpose, but English sources either don't reference it at all, or they say that Harold was in Normandy to secure the release of some of his kin from imprisonment. So there's a little bit of disagreement about whether or not there was intrigue in the mix at this point.
Yeah, this is, it's a thousand almost years ago, and both sides writing about it definitely have an agenda. But either way, the sources all pretty much agree that Harold swore to uphold William's claim to the throne. And then he went back from Normandy across the English Channel to England in about 1065.
So we're coming up on the happenings. So at this point, the stage seems to be set for, one would hope, a fairly smooth succession. Edward the Confessor has promised the throne to William of Normandy, and the surviving person with the next strongest claim to the throne, Harold Godwinson, has sworn an oath to honor Edward's decree. It seems like it should be cool.
It does. There's a third person with kind of a tie to the throne who we'll talk about a little bit later. But at this point, it's really between William and Harold, but even though it should not have been, really. But what happened next is that King Edward died after an uprising in Northumbria. He had tried to raise an army to put down the rebellion, but winter was coming, and people were pretty reluctant to get involved in what was really a civil war. So eventually, Edward just had to give in to the rebels' demands, and he was apparently so distraught by his failure to bring Northumbria back in line that he got sick and never got better again. He died at the beginning of January 1066.
And the king was buried on January 6th of 1066. And that day, even though he had sworn an oath to honor William's claim to the throne, Harold stepped in and took it for himself.
We don't really have a lot of clear historical documentation conclusively telling us why he did this. At the time, though, succession wasn't always a straight-up matter of father-to-son inheritance or of the king designating who was going to follow him to the throne. In England, a man wasn't really considered to be king until he had the support of a majority of England's most powerful men. Like we said, England was not super keen on the idea of having a Norman king.
And there are also some accounts, including the life of King Edward, which Queen Edith later had written, that said Edward either gave the kingdom to Harold on his deathbed or that he had entrusted it to him. In the Bayeux Tapestry, Harold is shown being given the crown, and almost 1,000 years later, we still don't entirely know what went down.
So, whatever the circumstances are of Harold being crowned king, William objected. And so apparently did Harold's brother Tostig, who then mounted two different invasions of England. The first came from Flanders, and the second came with backup from the Vikings. So Harold had to spend the start of his reign fighting off his brother in the far northern reaches of England.
But thanks to the lay of the land and the position of the English Channel, any invasion from Normandy would make landfall hundreds of miles to the south. And this meant that when William invaded, Harold would have a long way to travel to fight him off.
So since we've said 1066 a bunch of times, we know that that invasion is imminent. And before we get to it, let's take a moment and talk about a word from our sponsor.
Okay.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing. And no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Okay, now we're going to get back to the actual battle. And since we know from the top of the episode that this is what Tracy has gotten excited about talking about.
Very excited.
Go crazy.
So it took a little while before William made it to England. He had to raise a bigger army than he already had, and he had to build at least some of the ships that were going to be required to take them across the channel. The weather was also against him for a while, so they had to put off setting sail. He finally landed in England on September 27th or 28th of 1066, and he was on the southeast coast at Pevensey. And he took that town and marched to Hastings, which was 12 miles away, also pretty much on the coast. And at both of these locations, the Normans seized a fort and then modified it to suit their own ends by adding ramparts and moats.
And it would have taken days for the news to reach Harold of the Norman force at Hastings. And he had to march his men all the way from Yorkshire, which was about 200 miles away. They basically rode south as fast as they could, most likely dismissing the soldiers who didn't have horses to ride and mustering more as they went.
So, yeah, he was replacing the people who were on foot and couldn't keep up as they went, basically. Harold met William at Hastings on October the 13th, and the battle took place on the next day.
And although Harold's forces had ridden horses to Hastings, they all fought on foot, which was typical in English warfare at the time. William, on the other hand, had archers and cavalry in addition to his boots-on-the-ground infantry. And the English secured a defensible position on high ground, and the Normans approached them from below. So that's just sort of to set up the picture here.
Yeah, if you know much about medieval warfare, or if you've ever played any kind of strategy game that involves soldiers, this looks like a really one-sided battle, because you had people who were on foot versus people who had archers and horses.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about why it was not nearly that clear cut. Here's how William of Malmesbury describes the English. All on foot, armed with battle axes and covering themselves in front by the juncture of their shields, they formed an impenetrable body.
The English were also armed, we should say, with slings and spears, but it seems as though they did not really have many archers, probably because of the speed at which they had to move to Hastings. So it wasn't like they could rouse all of the archery-skilled gents in the area to come
right.
and help.
Here's how William of Malmesbury describes the Normans. Their infantry, with bows and arrows, formed the vanguard, while their cavalry, divided into wings, was placed in the rear. That duke is William, with serene countenance, declaring aloud that God would favor him as being the righteous side, called for his arms. And when, through the haste of his attendants, he had put on his hauberk the hind part before, he corrected the mistake with a laugh, saying, "The power of my dukedom shall be turned into a kingdom." Basically, there's a story here that he accidentally put his armor on backwards and then tried to turn that to his advantage rather than seeing it as a poor omen.
I had a nickel for every time I put my armor on backwards.
I know.
William of Malmesbury also describes the English as having stayed up all night drinking and singing, while the Normans instead spent the night confessing their sins and having communion in the morning, which is, in all likelihood, added color commentary and not a real thing. But both sides were clearly pretty worn out. The English from having traveled so far from getting to battle, and the Normans from having stood at the ready all night just in case an attack happened.
Yeah.
So whether they were drinking or confessing, no one had gotten sleep and they were all really tired.
Yeah, this account was written a little bit later in the 11th century, and there are parts of it that people pretty much agree you're probably right, but then when it gets to, and then the English were up all night drinking.
It's kind of like the Hessians thing, where they were all drunk.
Clearly because they lost, they must have all been inebriated, and that's really not true. So as we said earlier, the battle began with the English behind this shield wall, and then the Normans were arranged into lines with their crossbowmen at the front, and then their soldiers on foot, and then their knights on horses.
And it would seem, of course, as though the English were at a vast disadvantage, since they had neither a cavalry nor very many archers. But they did have the high ground, and they had a shield wall, and battle axes, which are, in fact, horrifying, though, maybe to think about, very effective weapons when it comes to battling men on horseback.
Yes. So if you do not hit the rider with your axe,
you will hit the horse, and it will go down.
Yes.
Which makes my sad face happen.
I knew when I was typing this that Holly was going to be very sad about the horses.
So predictable with the animal stuff.
So William moved his men in kind of waves. They would fire a volley of arrows and then alternate charges with the foot soldiers and the knights. And there were a lot of casualties on both sides, but the English shield wall held for a really long time. This battle went on basically all day.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
The tide of the battle turned when the Normans either retreated or feigned a retreat. Some accounts say this was a deliberate strategy on William's part, and others suggest that the Normans actually lost their nerve when a rumor spread that William had been killed. So we don't know why they turned.
Yeah, it's pretty much the English writers say that the Normans all kind of freaked out when their leader apparently fell but had not really fallen. And the Normans, on the other hand, say that it was a skilled battle maneuver on William's part.
I meant to do that.
Yeah. Either way, when the Normans started to flee, the English broke their ranks and went after them. And then the Normans turned on them and cut them down.
And it's also unclear whether this sequence of events actually happened once or twice. So maybe one time it was
out of fear, and one time it was on purpose. We don't know. But regardless, the shield wall started to fail, and the Normans really started to gain ground.
Yeah, I described this whole battle to the boyfriend, and he was like, they fell for that more than once. And I said, well, that's a little
we don't know for certain,
historically.
Possibly.
What we do know is that later in the afternoon, Harold was killed. The Bayeux Tapestry depicts him as being shot with an arrow through the eye in an extremely memorable sequence. But that's actually a later account. Like, that's not something that seems to have persisted on the day.
Right.
So that might be sort of a romanticized, horrifying edition of a later historian or writer, and not something that actually happened on that day. But when he fell, that's definitely when English soldiers really started to scatter. And as the sun started to set, the battle was pretty much over, with the Normans hoping to clean up the stragglers.
Yeah, the Normans went after the stragglers, and they slaughtered a lot of them. But many of the Normans were also killed after the battle itself was over, after piling onto one another against a rampart that was hidden in tall grass. And so this thing ended with just scores of bodies.
It was a big body count for this particular battle. So after the battle, Harold had died, William had won. But coming to the throne wasn't quite as simple as all that. It wasn't so much that William killed Harold in the battle and that William consequently got to be king. There was still actually one other heir to the throne alive at this point. That was Edgar Atheling, who was son of Edward the Exile, who was son of Edmund Ironside, who himself had been king for several months. So Edgar was only about 13 years old, but he did have a much clearer line of succession straight to the throne than either Harold or William did. And while he was not full of supporters all over England, he did have the backing of the Archbishop and the citizens of London.
And there's really all kinds of disagreement about what exactly took place next. How much force William used making his way to London, and how much the death toll continued to climb, those all still have a lot of question marks around them. We know that it was a really bloody campaign, though.
And in the end, Edgar's supporters did back down. William moved on to London and was crowned king on Christmas Day, 1066. He built Battle Abbey on the site of the battle, approximately as we think today. The town of Battle grew up around it, and the altar in the abbey is said to stand on the spot where Harold had stood at the center of the shield wall.
The aftermath of the Norman invasion really could be its own whole other podcast topic. The next several years were very grisly as the English rebelled against their new Norman king, and William deftly put down their rebellions. Case in point, the harrying of the north, in which William did a whole lot of conquering and pillaging in Northumbria, and as many as 100,000 people starved to death, which is just a huge...
It was a huge death toll.
Mammoth.
There was a lot of killing and pillaging for many years. And even though this was definitely a bloody and oppressive conquest, there are some modern beliefs about the Norman invasion that don't quite hold up. For example, the Normans did not introduce the idea of a class system to England. In Anglo-Saxon England, about 10% of the people were actually slaves, and most of the free people were peasants. There was a very, very small, very wealthy aristocracy and an even smaller ruling class that held actual power. So Anglo-Saxon England, like, was not some kind of utopia
where everyone was equal.
Yeah. It's also not true that women were better off before the Norman invasion. That comes up pretty often, too, this idea that women were equal to men before the Normans, and the Normans started subjugating them. So while it's totally true that women didn't have many rights and privileges after the Battle of Hastings, they really didn't before either.
This did, though, have one really huge impact that is recognized and I think most people know about, which is that it radically changed the English language through the influence of Norman-speaking rulers. So by the 12th century, people were speaking what we know today as Middle English, which is the language of the Canterbury Tales.
Yeah. So it definitely had a huge impact on the culture of England, sort of the direction of history.
Oh, for sure.
It's sort of considered a watershed moment in English history, especially But if you hear people say that the Normans were universally a terrible influence on England, that doesn't quite...
William was quite a grisly and bloody ruler.
Yes.
But especially... there were lots of bad and unfortunate things going on already.
Yes.
Yeah.
So today you can still visit the battle site in Sussex, although there's been some debate really recently about whether our modern idea of where the battlefield was is exactly the right one.
And in 2013, which is just as research was starting on this episode, the UK television show Time Team claimed that the site of the battle was really about 200 meters away on what's now a roundabout. And they used LIDAR technology to map the area near what's believed to be the actual battlefield.
So whether this is actually true is either up in the air or roundly dismissed, depending on who you talk to. There have been several other alleged, quote, real sites of the battle over the years, though. It's one of those things where it was a pretty big space people would have been fighting in. People keep sort of trying to pinpoint an exact spot. It kind of ranged
like saying,
a little
bit.
What
is the center of an amoeba?
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite that simple.
Yeah. English Heritage, also known as the Historic Buildings and Monuments Commission for England, disputed this whole Time Team finding, basically saying what we just said, that the battle took place over a wide swath of the area. So really, what was the point in trying to say this spot is where it happened? There are also three completely different sites that have been bandied about as the exact spot, in quotation marks.
And then there's also a cool thing online that you found that I know you're yearning to talk about.
I did. It is a Battle of Hastings game that you can play at the BBC. We will link to it in our show notes. You can play as William or you can play as Harold, and you can see what the results are if you make different decisions as a leader in the battle. At first I thought it was somehow rigged because I kept trying to play as William, and this was before I had researched exactly how the battle unfolded, and I failed a whole lot of times.
Aww.
And then I played it again after I had read it and went, oh, yes, I see. I see how this works now.
Do you also have listener mail for us to enjoy?
I really do, and hey, it's kind of related. This is from Andrew. Andrew says, hi guys, I'm a long-term listener living on the outskirts of West London, and I often listen to your show whilst walking my dogs on the old Hounslow Heath. I hope I said that correctly. Home to highwaymen, gunpowder, and the armies of James II. I've just enjoyed your episode on the Boston Massacre, a subject that I find interesting as my wife lived in Boston for 2 years, and I've spent some happy times there with the locals. I thought that you might like to hear how the British view on this unfortunate, quote, incident on King Street, as well as other events like the infamous, quote, Boston Tea Party. It always seems to me that many Bostonians now view these events through the eyes of modern Americans and fail to take into account the context. There's often bitter anger about the fact that, quote, we tried to tax, quote, them on goods to fund the troops that, quote, we sent to govern, quote, them. The mistake, of course, is to separate the peoples living on either side of the Atlantic into two disparate groups. At the time, all these people were British subjects living in a British colony, and as such, were liable to legitimate taxation to fund the services provided by the British government. A more accurate view of this situation is to imagine that one of the current American states decided that it wanted independence from the Union and no longer wished to pay any taxes to Washington, but still expected to have all the assistance, financial, military, administrative, etc., that are afforded to the members of the United States of America. When the members of the public of Boston in 1770 are viewed as a group of rebellious subjects led by people with a questionable connection to the smuggling trade, who attacked the appointed representatives of the law over the fact that they didn't want to pay government taxes, you come closer to seeing the way that these incidents are viewed from the old country. I hope that you find our views on this interesting and not too archaic. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to hearing more of your brilliant podcasts. Regards, Andrew. Thank you so much, Andrew.
That's so cool.
I love this. So I love this this email for a couple reasons. One, it is pretty awesome to hear from the other side of the pond on this particular subject.
Yeah. It's a perspective we never, ever are taught as American children in school.
Not at all. Our education on the Revolutionary War is really, really about us fighting off the big bad them.
Yeah. Like, and I imagine really, most places... when they're, you know, most countries raising their children, that's kind of how their stories go. It's about a little more of a patriotic to wherever they are slant.
Right. So the yes, number one, it's awesome to hear that this perspective of somebody who did not grow up here. And the other reason that it's awesome is that when researching that episode, I did try really hard to present both sides of how it went down, which I think I did as well as I could, considering that, you know, my entire education has been steeped in the idea that there was a we aligned against the us during the American Revolution.
Yeah.
So I still think I did an okay, a reasonably okay job portraying that. But hearing the first person perspective of somebody else is definitely awesome. So thank you, Andrew, for writing this wonderful letter. I especially like the reference to Highwaymen in the beginning. If you would like to write to us, you can. We are at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/historyclassstuff and on Twitter at Mistin History. Our Tumblr is mistinhistory.tumblr.com, and we are also on Pinterest. If you are interested in learning about something else that started roughly around the same period that we talked about today, you can come to our website, put the word Crusades in the search bar, and you will read how the Crusades worked. You can learn all that and a whole lot more at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.